Welcome to a special Brand Strand episode of the Good Listening To podcast with me, Chris Grimes, the podcast series that brings you The Clearing, where all good questions come to be asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. And Brand Strand is where I wrap an episode of the podcast with its strong storytelling construct around a particular company or individual to amplify their company or personal brand. Who are you? What's your story? And what do you do? So yes, welcome to a GLT Brand Strand, and we're recording, please. Oh, yes, indeedy doody. Welcome, welcome, thrice welcome to a particularly live and, exciting episode of The Good Listening To. This is a special Brand Strand episode where I'm delighted to be talking to Darren O'Connor from Passepartout. And this is the second of our founder stories where we're going to find out the story behind the story of what it is to be Passepartout. And Darren has a partner in Alex Taskin. Alex started Passepartout about 25 years ago, but Alex is obviously the partner and creative foil. And indeed, you are extremely welcome. How's morale and how's your day going so far, Darren O'Connor?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, really pleased to be here. Day's going pretty interestingly so far. It's kind of almost around the world in three calls. We started in New Zealand this morning and I was at Greenwich around the middle of the morning, and I've just had a Spanish lesson. So, yeah, I'm kind of reeling.
That is global head of yourself right there. So what's just happened in New Zealand?
Oh, it's just that we have a regular check-in with someone actually who we knew before we started the business, who's been kind of a mentor to us in a way, Denise Carter. Shout out to her. She kind of has been like one or two steps ahead of us with her business the whole time, so it's been really helpful sort of checking in with her every now and again about, oh, what have you been up to and what you're doing. And she's actually at the moment, she's actually now exiting her business, so there's quite a lot to learn from that.
So there's a cunning strategy there in surrounding yourself with people who are already doing or further ahead of what you're currently up to in order to pull you towards your future.
Well, very kind of you to say cunning, but yeah, there is, yeah.
Definitely a good strategy to surround yourself with people who've already done or are doing what you are setting out to achieve. And of course, you've achieved great things because you've been going for 25 years as Passepartout. I know rather excitingly, we're all about the story and storytelling, but I love the fact that you've aligned your story to Around the World in 80 Days. And of course, Passepartout, for those that don't know, is the valet to Phineas Fogg. And you have beautifully positioned yourselves as being the valets to your, or the personal valets to your success, which is a really lovely piece of storytelling from Passepartout, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, the valet thing, because I kind of feel like I'm the real valet. Alex is the kind of driver of this business. She's the founder. She started it. I'm the number two, the one that kind of the Jeeves type valet. You know, do you think that's wise, sir? kind of thing. So it's quite an interesting thing. But yeah, that is a big part of our philosophy, that we are there to help people and clients on their journey.
And you're being very generous here. Behind every awesome man, there's an even more awesome woman, which you're attesting to now, which is Alex Taskin, who started your business at your kitchen table. Presumably you were there when it happened, or was she locked in the kitchen on her own when it all happened?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember the sort of naming the business discussion, which happened in our living room in Cuxton while our second child was kind of dangling somewhere.
Parenting goals right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had this contraption, I can't remember what it was called now, but she used to sort of dangle freely in it while we got on with other things, you know.
I think it's called a bouncer.
Yeah, that'll be it.
Rather than having sort of half child, half gibbon as a child, it was hanging from somewhere, suspended and swinging about. And in fact, Lucy Taskin is part of your business too, if it's the same gibbon, if you won't mind me calling Lucy a gibbon.
Well, that wasn't the same child, but Lucy, so Lucy was five at that particular point. And she is a big part of our business. She's kind of dragging us into the 21st century, really. It is great to have somebody much younger with a completely different perspective, because you start to achieve things that actually you probably wouldn't even have imagined yourself. So yeah, yes. That multi-generational thing has been really important.
My son is 14, by the way, and he's always going, oh, old people with technology, he can't believe what I don't know that he just does. So I'm sure that Lucy's pulling into that.
Yeah, they just hit a block and then they just, you know, they find a way around it, don't they? It is really impressive. Yeah.
And by the way, very interestingly, when researching you, did you know that you're also, Darren O'Connor, is a lightweight Thai boxer? Did you know that?
No. Well, that's okay. I'll check that person out. When I have a kind of come across my name on Google, it tends to be a Houston estate agent or realtor, I suppose they call them. That's not so inspiring.
I found the more funky one. So you're a lightweight Thai boxer, but then what you actually say about yourself is you're a learning designer, a skeptic, you say, and a wannabe triathlete. And I'm interested in why you describe yourself as a skeptic. Obviously, we get that. And the wannabe triathlete, of course, I like the wannabe. Being a bloke, of course, it's because you're trying to try three things simultaneously, which is probably your triathlete aspirations are probably going a bit, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, I mean, I should probably take that off because I'm not sure about how much I want to be that anymore. But at the time when I put that together, I had just done my first triathlon. I do a lot of ones of things. I've done one marathon, one bungee jump, one triathlon, giving it a go. But it was an awesome experience. Did that in Ireland, actually. And I still remember Lough Kutra and, you know, being at the back of the swimming. yeah, absolutely. That's my worst event. But yeah, it's triathlon.
Just say the name of that event again. You were back at the pool of what event was that?
Oh, well, the venue was called Lough Kutra.
Ah, okay.
Which is sort of Galway direction. Yeah.
Ah, really, so you get somewhere nice and exotic in order to do your triathlon event.
Yeah, it really was, actually. Yeah.
And as we do, by the way, when, you know, here on LinkedIn particularly, when we all go to slightly clunky networking events, if someone does just turn to you and make you do all the work and say, what do you do? So either you or Passepartout, what's your favourite way of either answering or avoiding that question, would you say? So Darren O'Connor, what do you do, would you say?
I usually say I run a learning business with my wife and then let the conversation kind of develop from there. Because just the fact that we are a husband and wife team, I think, is, that's an endless kind of topic really to unpack, you know, especially having done it for 24 years, because I joined a bit after Alex started it. But yeah, I mean, the learning business, it's an interesting thing. I prefer that word to training because training feels more like it's a done-to thing, whereas learning is a bit more of a two-way kind of process. That would be generally what I'd say.
Also, on your LinkedIn profile currently, you're saying it's a fantastic time to be doing what you're doing because on a monthly basis, you're discovering what influences behaviour and habit.
Yeah, I would just say it's such a kind of a rich kind of domain, really, that we're in, I suppose. I mean, there is so much being published, whether it's from neuroscience or behavioural science, which kind of gives us this... you wouldn't say clarity or certainty, but kind of our guesses are getting better and better all the time about what does influence people to make good decisions, to take actions, to stay the course. Whereas when I started, I don't think I was even asking those questions, you know, but now it's just part of the conversation really that's had around, you know, this kind of work.
And I know that coaching and well-being and resilience are particular specialisms of what Passepartout have got up to, particularly during the pandemic. So as we know, during the pandemic, companies or entities were sort of in a binary world. You either went, way, you know, in the balloon ride up into the skies, or you're in the wrong industry and it descended like a lead balloon. But you had a real sort of pocket of growth within the thermals of the pandemic, didn't you? Within the balloon of Passepartout, you'll see what I'm doing there.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose there's a couple of things that's kind of enabled that. One was that, you know, when the pandemic hit, 1 week we were looking at losing our biggest client and potentially having to find other work to do. And then the next week, our biggest client was coming back to us and saying, actually, we want to repurpose you. Can you do this for us? We have actually been quite reactive. This will be something that probably will come through later as we talk about it. But quite often where we've got to as a business is by responding to a request and ask. And quite often we're not sure if we can actually meet that before we actually then start to actually, you know, give it a go.
That's the true entrepreneurial thrust of if someone asks you something, you don't know what
to do. I guess so, yeah.
Say yes and then work it out later.
But yeah, I mean, through the pandemic, it's been maybe the most rewarding kind of period for us, really, because we've been able to just turn things around and help far kind of greater audiences than ever before. I mean, Alex, I think she mentioned this when she spoke to you. It's literally tens of thousands of people that we've been able to kind of connect with, either directly or indirectly through the networks we set up. So, yeah, it's just changed our whole perspective.
And I know in the first founder story with Alex, there was an extraordinary story about how the backstory of her having been in an accident involved by being, you know, kicked in the head by a horse. This is just before the pandemic. So there are all sorts of adjustments and brave new strides you had to make within what you were experiencing, and her particularly.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really tough time for her. For me, as you know, business partner and husband, the worry for me is that she's back jumping on horses again. So, but there you go. You can't help people back, can you? But without being too gloomy, we have actually had quite a lot of adversity, like I think everybody has through this. I lost my father, Alex lost her mum. Last year, Penny, our niece, also died. So those kind of things, and I think also what's happening right at the moment in Ukraine, they certainly keep reminding you of the importance of having a sense of perspective, really, about what you're doing.
Yes, and of course we are speaking to each other on an extraordinarily sort of historical, precedented day. You know, the 7th of March, historically as it happens to be. I think this is just day 12 of the catastrophe that's happening in Europe at the moment.
Yeah. It's hard to ignore, isn't it? It's there all the time. It's funny because I was thinking about this and kind of getting ready for this conversation that. I grew up, my dad was in the forces, he was in the army. So I grew up British Army on the Rhine, so living in Germany quite a lot. And I'm having conversations now where I'm realizing that lots of people didn't have that kind of mindset that we had. I assumed everybody did, which is that we thought the world was probably going to end around about 2003 and it would be, you know, a nuclear disaster. That kind of went away. But yeah, the way it's come back is it's quite shocking, isn't it?
Interestingly, in terms of the historical imperative, I was born about 3 months after the Cuban crisis, just in terms of historical stuff. So that was 62. I mean, I kind of popped out oblivious to that.
Well, you don't look it, Chris.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You
you guys. Okay, so let's get you on the open road then. And you, I appreciate you may well resonate with more stories about your dad in terms of what influenced you as you come up through what we're going to curate you through now, which is the journey of the Good Listening To, where it's going to take place energetically in a serious, happy place of your choosing, which is called The Clearing. And The Clearing is where all good questions come to get asked. I think you'll find, and all good stories come to get told. And so we're going to talk about a clearing, then there's a tree, then there's some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a couple of random squirrels, and a cake. So it's all to play for. And there's an invitation and an invocation to go deep at as many points as you like, as you're already beginning to do beautifully, if I may say. So let's get you on the open road then of this curated journey. What is a clearing like for you, Darren O'Connor? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Yeah, well, when you say those last bits, I kind of wonder about my choice here. But my clearing has to be Elland Road, which is the home of the Mighty Leeds.
Oh! Sorry, I had the original Alan Clark all-white strip with the number nine socks. This is when I came back from Uganda when I was about 9 years old. I got bought the strip. So they're the only team I really knew anything about as a kid. Leeds United, thank you.
Wow. Well, yeah, I think we've got a lot in common there. Mine was coming back from Germany, but yeah, very similar.
And apologies for hijacking that moment. It's not about me, it's about you. But I found that very relatable. Alan Clark, let's get him on the podcast. Anyway, sorry, back to you. So Elland Road... What is it that does for you?
It's probably, in terms of a space, it's the space in the world that gives me the biggest thrill when I'm there. And actually, the amount of times I've been there in my life is shockingly few, actually. It's probably nudging towards 100. But if you think about my age, I've had one season ticket. And then in that year, I managed to get up about, I don't know, 15, 16 times just because of distance, you know. I mean, I did have a couple of experiences of getting most of the way up the M1 and then abandoning it. so that's how tricky it has been. But when I am there, obviously context is everything, isn't it? So, you know, being there at the end of a defeat, not so much of a clearing, but you know, being there before a game, or actually being there after, even if you just decide to stay on a bit, even after the players have done the lap of honour, it is an inspiring place for me. I mean, it's partly about what goes on during the match and the incredible kind of noise you hear and the reaction. If you ask me a space that has a profound impact on me, that is it.
And by the way, congratulations, you are the first guest, male or female, who has mentioned a football stadium as being your clearing. So that's fantastic. You are the first. And just other question about Elland Road then, because it is the Leeds United stadium, for anyone who doesn't know. It's unusual that I may necessarily know that, but there was just that immediate connection. But is there a particular golden age that you hearken back to?
Well, it's interesting because... I'm not from Yorkshire. The reason I support Leeds, and this probably may go back a bit to your kind of Uganda kind of history, is I lived in Germany at the time when I was sort of getting into football, and I wanted to support Borussia Mönchengladbach, which was down the road. And my dad said, you can't, you know, you've got to support an English team. It's sort of not patriotic. So I picked a team out of the newspaper, and that was Leeds, because I like the name. And what I didn't know at that particular time is I was choosing to support them just after their golden age. They weren't going to win anything for quite a while. But I'm going to actually say, just because it was such a thrill, last season was a golden age. With first season back in the Prem, even those games where there weren't any spectators, you know, the closed games, even those, I remember the Villa game last season, Bamford hat-trick, you know, there was still an amazing atmosphere with all the subs sort of coming on and sort of collapsing in a heap on the pitch. It was just an incredible season.
I'm now going to rescue us both from the rabbit hole of just talking about football.
Well, that's yeah, maybe you should, yeah.
So I'm now going to arrive with a tree then in your stadium clearing. And it's a bit quirky. Oi, get the tree off the pitch. At least I'm not a streaker. But we're going to shake your tree now to see which storytelling apples fall out. And this is where you've been kind enough, Darren O'Connor, to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, and this is where the two random squirrels come in. But squirrels, you know, borrowed from the film Up, what are your monsters of distraction? And then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So over to you to shake the canopy of your tree, please, Darren. And you can answer this from a passepartout perspective or a personal or both.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a mix of both. So, yeah, so there was the four things that shaped me, wasn't it, to begin with. So I've touched on one already, and I think it's army life, actually. So that lots of people who were forces kids would kind of recognise this, that you never stayed anywhere for too long, lots of postings, so you moved around from place to place. And as I said, there was this backdrop of kind of Armageddon, but you were also always in a really sort of safe environment as well. So that interesting kind of ambiguity, really, of feeling like...
Do you mean the barrack enclave?
There were garrisons, you know. I mean, there's one really big one called Rheindahlen, which was near Mönchengladbach in Germany, which I don't know the numbers on that, but it must have been... kind of the size of Chatham or something, which is down the road from me now. So, you know, you're talking about tens of thousands, you know. So you go, you know, there's schools there, there's a swimming pool there. You, at the age of sort of six, I would be cycling miles to go and get the newspaper for my parents and, you know, no bother at all. So real kind of safety, almost idyllic in a way, the way it was sort of placed. But the other thing about army life is, as I said, they're kind of the transience as well, and that you are constantly moving, which has left with me kind of, I suppose, a facility with picking up new things. I'm really good at starting things. Not so good at maybe the kind of back end of keeping it going, which is something that's quite important to recognise in business, I think.
Although it's quite nice that Passepartout is a long journey, and it is about the journey. It's 80 days, you know, in the metaphor of it. So it's about the journey towards. It's not just we've done it. It's an evolving journey and an exploration.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the longer we go, the longer we kind of realise that, you know, the thing that you can do to have more kind of positive impact on people is actually it is the aftermath bit. So helping people make some kind of really significant personal breakthrough, but it's not until at a certain point later on they look back at that and then they see that and recognize it for what it was that it really starts to kind of sink in. So yeah, a lot of the kind of technology is kind of enabling that a lot better now, because you can really track learner progress much better than you ever could before, and help people kind of understand and stay with something and then come back to them and nudge them later. The kind of sustainability is greater, I'd say, definitely.
And you're a learning designer, and that was implicit there in you knowing that it has to have a sort of map and a methodology that measures success, in what I'm understanding there.
Yeah, and you know, with learning design, what you're fascinated with is what is going to kind of create those synapses, you know, those connections, because that's where the real kind of action is in terms of knowledge and understanding and conviction and starting to change behavior. It's those connections in the brain. So, you know, if it would be awesome to have the kind of technology, fMRI sort of scanning, which would enable you to see those connections forming. And I, you know, there have been experiments with coaching where they have scanned people pre and post coaching to see what kind of, you know, connections have been made, or what kind of changes are kind of visible on the heat map. I just don't think anyone can read those well enough yet to really understand what's really going on. But it's a possibility. It is there. It's happening in a small way.
That's very appealing, by the way. Here's a brain of somebody I've coached. Here's a brain of somebody I haven't. Well, good luck working out the difference.
Well, with the pre and post, what they did find in the kind of, and there have been some really good sort of positive examples of this, is that, you could definitely see a kind of a sense of reduced anxiety, for instance. So impact on sort of felt stress levels, anxiety, sense of well-being. Those things seem to be coming up quite emphatically, actually, in the scans that were done. But yeah, it's still very inexact.
And in the journey of the storytelling that we're talking about, influencing is also a very big, you know, what has influenced us. As we know, the power of influencing, we've all experienced it where, you know, a teacher, a parent, somebody somewhere said something to you once that you've never forgotten. Even somebody who might be trying to do it as a sort of dark or toxic thing in what they say to you. But sometimes, you know, if it's a bully, people can sometimes invert that and not let them get the better of them. So it's the power of influencing is we all experience it.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's because we do this a lot on our kind of leadership and management programs. One of the first questions we ask people is, you know, what's influenced you as a leader? Go back and identify, you know, a bit of jargon, a crucible moment, a kind of a significant moment in your career that has really shaped what you believe and what you are now kind of enacting in your own career. Mm. And the interesting thing is that most people seem to be able to remember a negative influences and experience much more readily. So those are the things that they go to first or sort of more recently. So bad leaders or, you know, people who've actually had a negative impact on that seems to stay longer. You actually have to really kind of push quite hard to get people to kind of identify and then unpack positive experiences.
Yes.
And that's kind of a big thing in our world that we try to rebalance that because there's definitely a deficit mindset, I feel. Maybe it's a UK thing, I don't know. But we really try to kind of get people to recognize the other side of that equation, that the strengths that they bring, the talents that they have. And where did I go right? You know, people don't ask themselves that question very often.
That's a great question. Where did I go right? Just let that float there. Great question. So we're still in the canopy. So more shapages.
More shapages. Okay, well, somebody asked that Scrum Time, that would go back to sport. This will date me a bit, but Steve Ovett, fabulous British middle distance runner. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the mime. what I loved about him was that he was the underdog, because there was this dynamic between him and Seb Coe. Seb Coe was always one who was slightly or sometimes really massively on top. So the time when Steve Ovett won the gold in the Moscow Olympics 1980, that was kind of pretty kind of big moment for me, because I was really rooting for him. I was into running then, and I've always kind of kept that kind of I don't know what it is. It's a bit bloody minded, but I will always go for the person that probably has the least chance in the situation.
The hard worker, the one that needs tenacity to succeed. I love that.
That's I guess so. He was unglamorous. He was he was a bit rude to journalists, you know. There was just something a bit rough about him, which I really liked.
He was scuzzy and authentic. We liked that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that straddles both shaping and influencing, I'm hearing, which is completely fine. I'm just pointing that out. You can go where you like within the canopy of the apples. It's how do you like these storytelling apples that you're throwing out for us to chomp on? So where else would you like to go next in your tree?
So I'm going to... This is probably one that straddles as well, actually, but it's a shaping thing. I mean, you referred to... just now to, you know, something that's stuck with you. I think I am pretty much stuck in adolescence in a lot of ways, and kind of my taste and my probably the kind of quality of my thinking. But one thing stuck with me from adolescence is a quote from somebody called Sextus Empiricus. I think I may have misremembered that, but the quote is, we can be sure of nothing, not even of the fact that we can be sure of nothing, which is one that you kind of disappear. So his conclusion from that is, so basically, you know, keep a bit of healthy skepticism about you don't just stop, do stuff, engage, do your best, but always have that kind of bit of skepticism.
Therein lies the derivation of your skeptic mantra about yourself.
Yeah.
It made me think of stoicism as well, actually. And that was almost a beautifully stoic quote. It reminds me of the Hamlet line as well. Nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so.
Yeah. Yeah. I could go with that. Yeah, absolutely. So
give us your quote again, because it's one of those lovely brain frying philosophical ones, but it's great. Just reposition it.
We can be sure of nothing, not even of the fact that we can be sure of nothing.
That's my brain popping. That's great. Lovely quotings. Lovely. We're still in the canape of your tree.
And we're into people or things that have shaped you. So I'm actually going to, I've mentioned her already, but Alex, my wife and my kind of business partner, has had a profound kind of effect on my life. I mean, in all sorts of ways. But I think, you know, you do hear people saying this, what would my life have turned out like if I hadn't, you know, happened across this person, met this person? And it's definitely the case. She brings all sorts of things to our kind of partnership that I definitely need, and which I don't bring myself. And I've mentioned kind of drive, just that kind of forward thinking outlook. I'm very much a live in the present type person. I don't really think too far ahead, and I don't think too far back. You need somebody who is going to be thinking ahead and making things happen in that way.
It makes such sense, by the way, because obviously we're hearing the two founder stories in what you're doing, and Alex and I riffed on the idea of your vibe attracts your tribe. I'm not just talking about each other and attraction. I'm talking about how your extended network of who's arrived to be co-facilitators with you in the coaching pool in which you have, there's something about the law of attraction going on there, where it's similar type of people who tribally make the passepartout fit.
Yeah, and it's the value of difference, isn't it? Which, you know, something you can hear and sort of brush off as a bit of a truism, or something, maybe even a bit trite, how difference is really important. But I mean, I feel like our partnership is kind of living proof of that. And it's something I see a lot in all the kind of teams and organizations we work with as well. It's true, but it's easy to dismiss.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk. for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We could now be on to two things that never fail to grab your attention. The monsters of distraction. You're not allowed to say Leeds United again.
No. I was thinking about this. So one thing that never fails to grab my attention, it's a way of being. I think it's, I don't know what the noun is, but it's trolls, basically. People who... And there have been loads of them through my life, people who are kind of very publicly, to my mind, controversial, usually irritating, but they make me pay attention to them. Do you know, in Private Eye, there's that kind of, in the bookworm section at the back, there's that kind of... graphic, that icon of the guy smoking a pipe but looking really annoyed while he's doing it, so the cloud of pipe smoke is kind of a really cloud of irritation. That I'm that guy, and these trolls are making me feel irritated. So I mean, That's
a bit Phineas Fogging again, the idea of a sort of Victorian pipe of some sort. And trolls are normally perceived, obviously, as being deeply toxic individuals who sort of put the world to right by sitting in their pants at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I think they're really important to listen to. And I mean, so I could list the trolls from my life. The first one was Simon Bates. Remember his Golden Hour? Then the Julie Burchill, that kind of... then there was A.A. Gill and another journalist. Nowadays, it's kind of QAnon, it's Fox News. I actually deliberately kind of tune in to these kind of what these people are saying so that, one, I can keep my irritation and keep that fueled, because I do find it quite inspiring. But two, so you kind of don't miss... So you don't live in an echo chamber, basically. I remember after Brexit kind of having conversations where I was starting to realise that, you know, there was a whole worldview that I wasn't being exposed to in, you know, the people I dealt with. So I kind of really deliberately make sure I do tune into that now.
And is your centre ground, by the way, being a healthy sceptic? That all makes complete sense, where you go to the outlier perspective to make sure your perspective is either right, wrong or needs correcting. So a healthy skill.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there is always something to learn from that. Very often, actually, the things that you do hear when you tune into the counterpoint, there's always something in it. You know, there's always a good reason why people feel that way. And if we kind of just don't give it any credence at all, I think, we've seen the consequences, haven't we, really?
Yes, the dangers of a toxic binary world. Absolutely. You're allowed one other.
Oh yeah, okay. So, and the other one again. I'm probably being a little bit teenagey here, but it's kind of hypocrisy and justice. You know, that will never fail to grab my attention. There's been so many examples of that recently, haven't there? The one from the pandemic that really struck a chord with me. There was a date when they released some stats about the proportion of non-white clinicians that had died as a result, and the percentages were just so scary. So with dentists, it was 90%, you know, but with nurses and doctors, it was also really high. So what was happening that they were so much more exposed to those dangers than white colleagues? That I still don't think we've really had a proper examination of that yet, but it did get immediate kind of response reaction from within the NHS, which is one of our biggest clients, but I think more widely as well. But yeah, it's things like that where it's just so jarring. You can't.
Are you involved in work within Passepartout that's directly addressing that now, because it became something that struck home with you and resonated?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing this incredibly rewarding program called it's training strengths coaches. And the initiative actually came from within the NHS, but what they wanted to do was relate to something quite important, actually, which is around the sense of inclusion you feel as a coachee. Because so lots of coachees will find their coach through a network. But if you're scrolling through sort of lots of kind of profiles of coaches and you're not seeing anyone like you, that's potentially a bit of an issue. Mm. And I remember hearing a young black woman who was saying, "I love my coach, but I seem to have to spend an awful lot of my coaching sessions explaining my experience because they don't get that."
Yes.
So. So this project, the Strengths Coach Project, is about training up lots of, I hate the phrase, but people still use it, BAME, so Black, Asian and Minority Ethnic coaches, so that they're, and we've got over 100, so that the choice across the system of coaches is much greater, and so the accessibility becomes greater for people who maybe up till then will not have seen somebody that they could possibly relate to. So it's quite a big deal. And it's strengths coaching, which is quite specific. So that is really kind of a focus on what are your talents? What are the things that you uniquely bring into any kind of given situation? And how can you make the most of those? So it's, part of positive psychology, which is very much the grounding of our business at the moment, I would say.
And as you quite rightly say, a coach's job is to hold the experience, not make the coachee explain their experience.
Yeah, I mean, I can see actually there are benefits, obviously, in giving someone that space to kind of come out with their own narrative and piece it together. But still, I mean, when someone chooses a coach, let's say it's someone looking for an exec coach, the first thing they look for is someone who's had a similar experience, speaks the same language, that compatibility, it's really important. Mm.
So a quirky or unusual fact about you now, we couldn't know unless you tell us. And again, can't mention Leeds United again, unless you scored a hat trick for Leeds United.
Which I know I have. The quirky facts. I think this might be about my mum's dad. And it's just simply the fact that we don't know who he was. Ooh. So, I mean, as you look at me, Chris, what nationality would you say I was? Is it not obvious at all?
Well, one would guess, but white European, but, you know, was it Chormley you said you're living near now? I wouldn't
know. No, I live in Kent. But my mum was from Belfast, but growing up, she was the only dark girl that she knew. So it had quite a kind of profound influence on her. In fact, you know, she said that she was treated as special and she got spoiled because she was kind of a one of a kind in her kind of neighborhood, but she never knew who her dad was. So we've had lots of stories about who he might have been and where he might have been from. But if you see my mum, you know, you would say that maybe she looks maybe slightly Southeast Asian, you know.
Okay.
But we don't know. So it's interesting because it wouldn't be that difficult to find it out, would it, with these DNA kits you have these days? I'm sure we could do it, but nobody has up till now. So, you know, it's a bit of
work to be done by you. Are you going to unleash the gates of DNA?
I think I am going to do it. In fact, a few years ago, I did buy my mum one of those kits, and it's still unused, so maybe I should just go for it.
Maybe you should, and that's a bit of a world exclusive. I love that. The multi-texture of life is the fascinating thing, which always, in my mind, always makes racism so staggeringly stupid, in the sense that, we're all from everywhere.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a notorious French writer, Rabelais, who talked about basically everyone is really just their history is about where they washed up, you know, from wherever they migrated from, kind of thing, you know. But we've all had that in our kind of history, so yeah,
we've all got about a bit, is what we're saying. Okay, so I'm curating a conversation which is getting a bit of a lick on now because of the 50-minute sort of gatepost I'm driving us towards. So that's wonderful tree shakage. Now we're going to stay in the clearing, move away from the tree, and we're talking now about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, Darren O'Connor, what are you absolutely happiest doing?
Yeah, I think flow comes for me when it's actually pressure that does that to me. And I find this quite a lot with people I work with and delegates that we work with, that without an element of some kind of pressure, whether it's deadline pressure or the pressure to kind of deliver for other people, that certain people need that more than others, and unfortunately it's important fuel for me.
That must be a very epicentric good thing to have centre ground within Passepartout, if you've got to deliver, and you are the go-to Mr. Deliver, if you're responding.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it can be kind of pressure that you're kind of bringing on yourself in terms of the expectations that you have of yourself and the standard you expect to kind of reach. There was quite a big sort of pivot point for our business a few years ago where we lost a tender, which we thoroughly expected to win. Just turned up and kind of felt like it was kind of almost promised work. We didn't get it. And the feedback was, yeah, well, it was a bit dull, what you're offering kind of thing, you know, it wasn't particularly cutting edge. So Alex and I kind of went away from that and had a couple of conversations. And the result of it is that I spent probably the next kind of 3-4 months just trying to research and understand everything we could about current knowledge, about what makes learning work. And that completely changed what we deliver.
You sharpened or resharpened your instruments, is a good thing.
Yeah.
You learned anew and you resharpened and adapted, because it is about, in this whole climate of the last few years, who knows what's going to happen next, but it's about the survival of, it's not so much the fittest, it's the most flexible and adaptive. So you need to keep learning and keep resharpening.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's... there's a phrase, anti-fragile, isn't there? And I think that's probably what that's about, really, kind of, having that kind of bounce-back ability, I guess.
Okay, now I'm going to award you with a cake, and rather than just splatching it straight in your face, this is where you get to put a cherry on the cake. What's a favourite inspirational quote? You've already given us a really juicy one. What notes might you offer to a younger version of yourself or passepartout? And then finally, legacy inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's prestige and all the bearded women, merely players. How, when all is said and done, would you most like to be remembered?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in there, Chris.
Thanks.
I'm going to be slightly flippant on this one, but I'm going to go for the cake and the quote together, because I'm not that bothered about cakes these days. I have to be a bit careful. So I'm going for Spinal Tap. And I don't know if you remember this lyric, but I will try and deliver it for you. I won't go Shakespeare in here, but it's big bottom, big fat bottom. Talk about bum cakes. My girl's got them. And I think that's as true today as it's ever been.
And that's how you shall be remembered, I'm assuming.
But yeah, in terms of how you'd be remembered, it's an interesting thing. I'm not a religious person, and I'm really not sure if anything much will happen after this. So I kind of, maybe it's back to that kind of skepticism, but I think you've got to work as if you are going to make a huge difference. But don't expect it. Remember that life moves on very quickly. So I think that humility about, you know, what you really are in the grand scheme of things is also really important.
You've been listening to me, Chris Grimes. This has been Darren O'Connor from the wonderful Passepartout. As this has been your moment in the clearing and in the sunshine of same, is there anything else you'd finally like to say, Darren?
Apart from a big thank you, Chris, it's been really nice, this kind of opportunity to think about the bigger picture for yourself. Is it doesn't happen very often, so really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And just where can we find out more about Passepartout on the hinterweb?
Well, our website, which is www.pass-partout.com, that would be the place.
So Passepartout, the personal valets to your success in the very safe hands of Darren O'Connor and Alex Taskin. Thank you very much indeed, and good night. You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye. So, Darren, we've just had a really wonderful conversation together in the Good Listening To. If I could just ask for your immediate feedback, what was that like being given a Good Listening To in this special Brand Strand episode?
Really actually enlightening, yeah. I mean, you know, this is something we say to all our kind of learners. It's really worth kind of understanding and interrogating your own experience, because there's There's so much to learn from it.